C1M. Number 10B.
Now let us go over it in a big way. Just always for the one and only purpose to get the feel of the six subjects, and all the details are so nice for each one to ponder and to study and to work out. The fifth subject, in order to get the linking, the fifth subject gave us the method of propagating a better human species in order to advance mankind. How to improve the generation of mortals. And in order to do that, she allows the concession of sex for the propagation, but besides that, asks for no other concession, but says, let the higher, refined sense of life be the educator of the children. But this concession of sex brings, as we know, and as she has shown there, in many ways, inheritance heeded, was the marginal note, shows that this sex belief is always bad. Beliefs are always bad, no matter if they are sex belief or health beliefs or whatever, they are always bad. And so the demand is now to free ourselves as much as we can, as far as we can, from the sex belief. And really, if we look at the sixth subject, it is showing us a savior for all that sex belief. For the belief in body, for the belief in mortal ancestries, for the belief in the inequality of sex, for the belief of that marriage is a union of sex, for the belief in free love or indulgence in sex, for the belief also that sex can be legalized at the bridal altar and therefore becomes legalized. As Mrs. Eddy says, that marriage is only legalized lust. And lastly, shows that sex, she says, suffers fearful discord, that there is no fulfillment in sex. So we can trace, really, through the subtones, we really can trace in every subtone a belief of sex which has to be overcome, and each one has to overcome. Being born of mortals, we inherit the beliefs of sex and what sex implies. And by sex, I mean all that is implied by it, in the way of body, in the way of organic life, in the way of corporeal propensities, and so on. All that is included in it. So let's go again over this subtones just in this way and see, well, the sixth day, sixth subject says, well, children should become men and women. You remember yesterday how in that article, Mrs. Eddy on the new birth, how she made the distinction between first how we grow into the infant Christianity, and then afterwards how we have seen how she says that as we grow into the manhood and womanhood of Christianity, and how we have seen there that infant Christianity is really depicting the first five subjects in marriage, and how then we had to grow out of that infant Christianity into the manhood and womanhood of Christianity, where we find so much lacking. And here you see it again. At the end of the fifth subject, she shows that and says, the children, the infant Christianity, children should become men and women, should grow into the manhood and womanhood of Christianity. How? She says, through the understanding of man's higher nature. For what? For freeing oneself, for saving oneself from that matrix of mortality, from that generation of mortality to which we have made the concession after the fifth subject. So here she frees through the seven subtones of the sixth subject. She comes and says, our Savior is in our understanding of man's higher nature. And I want to say that again because it's important. We all must lovingly, devotedly, consecratedly, sooner or later, in our quiet sanctuary, pray out and atone out, if I may say so, that sense that we have ever been born of parents, and therefore have inherited not only some characteristic trait, but inherited a body and an organism and a name and a citizenship and a national trait and all that. So let's see that this sixth subject is not an interesting subject. It is our being. It is our most important problem which every one of us must work out, to free oneself of the belief that we are mortal. Here she compares man with the mortal and shows that an understanding of man saves us from the belief to be a mortal. Here she shows that the mortal as a sexual proposition and embodiment can be freed by an understanding of man. First, in truth of mind, we begin to see that man is not from erring human conception, neither from erring human concepts nor from erring human conception. That we have our origin in mind, in divine mind. Second, she shows the belief of sex says that therefore we evolve in matter and through matter and through material qualities and have therefore our source of our substance in brute instinct. The truth about it is that we more understand that only the beautiful, good and pure constitute our ancestry, that we are the offspring of spirit, and that therefore nothing has ever evolved in man but the beautiful, good and pure, and that therefore we have only been evolved and evolved through the qualities of the beautiful, good and pure, and that we have never evolved through material conditions prior to reaching intelligence. Then, in the third, we come to the understanding that man is not classified through sex, that there is no classification in terms of sex, and therefore no discrimination of sex, and that that's what we need so much, because here and there, so often we say, or we feel, or we are unconsciously conscious, so to say, that we say, well, I can't do that, I'm a man, I'm only a woman. Well, that's a right job for a man, that's not a job for a woman, and so on, you see. We always make that distinction in our thought, more than what we are really conscious of. And so it's a sex belief that's come with sex. From little, tiny little, it says, I nearly talk now in Swiss German, is it a girl or is it a boy? See, before we can even talk, we are classified, is it a girl, is it a boy? And that classification is is just impregnated into our whole mentality, that we are only a boy or a girl. And therefore, being only a boy, we have only these qualities and not those qualities, and so on. So, but if we go back to mind and spirit as our source and evolution, then naturally something in us becomes natural that we have all the qualities which spirit has given, and that all the qualities spirit has always been given to us, and that there is no division in qualities. And then the discrimination of sexes falls in our consciousness, and we have won a higher sense of manhood for us and for the others. Then, in truth's principle, the belief is handled that marriage is the unity of two sexes. And it's the belief, really, that only through the unity of sexes we can be creative and productive, and without that our talents will lay bare and waste. That's wrong. Here, in principle, it says, well, through that understanding of man's higher nature, we begin to see that there is only one man, God's man. And therefore, translated to the human plane, we can see that we are wedded to each one, that through that wedding we become one man, and that we can regard ourselves all together as wedded into one manhood. And that frees us from that belief that we can be restricted to just one relationship, dictated really by sex. A relationship of marriage which is dictated by sex. It's always the attraction of two different sexes. Then we come to life, where she shows that until we see that the Father of God, of man, is God, that until we see that we must support everything that is good and worthy in human life, and not open the gates for ludicrous shifts, for free love, for loose living, and so on. Indulgence in sex. But that life is always that which supports good. And that unity of hearts must be remain a unity of hearts and not lose its standard. Then we came to truth, and in truth it was shown that our higher understanding of man must handle the belief that really sex, through wedding oneself at the bridal altar, can dominate man's happiness and give man's happiness. We must really see that Christ should rule that occasion, and that Christ turns the water into wine. That Christ can give us an inspiration and happiness, a joy, which sex can't give us. Whereas the bridal altar tries to legalize sex, we should see that the higher nature of man, the Christ, is that which alone can satisfy us. And really does. And lastly, in love, she says, sex suffers fearful discord. The belief is that sex gives fulfillment. And here she uncovers that, because as we rise higher in the line of spiritual creation, we begin to see that there is only one fulfillment, and that fulfillment is in understanding reality. That alone is eternal and therefore alone can satisfy and bear fulfillment. Well, that's the way how she handles here many of the claims of sex and heredity. They're really both the same, sex and heredity. It is a freeing process. It's a savior, really, that comes now to the child. In the fifth subject, the child just stands there and says, well, what have you done, parents, with me? What have you done and thought about me? What youth have you given me? What experiences have you given me? And there may be a rebellion in the heart against the parents. And in most cases it is so, sooner or later. And the answer is not by blaming parents. The answer is mainly, in the sixth subject only, that the child finds his or her understanding of true manhood as something which is derived from God. And each one of us has to do it. Then we find the Savior, the Christ, that saves us from the belief that we are a mortal and the outfit of a mortal. Sooner or later, each one of us has to do that. Well, this just leaves me a little while for something which I nearly forgot. How the sixth subject is the outcome of prayer and atonement. Just as yesterday, we always tried to see how each subject in these chapters link up with each other. So let's quickly go through the sixth subject of prayer, to the sixth subject of atonement and Eucharist, to the sixth subject of marriage, and see that there is a natural rhythm in it. In prayer, we remember that the sixth prayer was that attitude of affirming God, and through affirming God, shutting out sinful sins in that sanctuary of spirit, and thereby establish health. That was the prayer where we claim God, affirm God, and that affirming God and affirming God shuts out erroneous sins and establishes health. But this demand, this proposition, demands, in order to fulfill it, in order to fulfill that prayer, demands from atonement and Eucharist that we let go of the false sins of men, and thereby allowing the new birth of man to take place in its full form, in every detail. Remember, in the sixth subject of atonement and Eucharist, we had the birth of the new man in every detail, as depicted and illustrated through Jesus' whole life career from conception to ascension. For the life story, how the new man is being born the moment we let go the false concept of man. Well, letting go the false concept of man, in the measure as we do that, because in atonement and Eucharist we couldn't do it fully. It was just the demand that was set there. But in marriage, we do it step by step. Marriage is the temporal stage, transitional stage, the comparative stage, where step by step we try to fulfill prayer and atonement and Eucharist. So the more I fulfill prayer and atonement, Eucharist, the new birth takes place in me. And therefore, the more I'm wedded to the new sense of man, the higher standard of manhood, the higher ideal, really. Can you see that? Let's do it again. See, in prayer we always have the proposition, which says, all right, if you want to reach God and approach God as He is, the sixth subject says, you must take that attitude where you are willing to affirm God, because through affirming God, by that willingness to affirm God, you will oust out all that is unlike God and man. And so the demand in Atonement and Eucharist comes and says, all right, let go of the false man. And in the measure as we let go of the false man, we don't put anything in between God and man. And so the real man is being born in every detail. The moment Mary in Atonement and Eucharist saw that God is the only Father of men, the whole true ideal man came to birth and sprang into being. Well, the more I do that, and it's a gradual development, the more I do that, the more I let the false sense of man go, well, the more I experience what we were talking today as a sixth subject in marriage, namely that the more I'm being wedded, the more in me takes place, the more in me is manifest or embodied a true sense, a higher sense, it's a comparative, a higher sense of manhood. And it shows, as we have seen, that this higher sense of manhood, this taking place of a higher sense of manhood, is a blessed state which has an effect. And its effect is shown there as giving, as contributing to an ever higher standard of manhood, of establishing a higher race for legislation, of establishing a manhood who is not restricted to a one-to-one relationship, but a one-to-an-universal relationship. It's giving to the society a much higher touch, much higher tone of humanhood. And so I become a contributor and a contribution to a higher sense of society through that.